Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coach and Coordinator Podcast, and we continue talking to state champions. Joining us is another state champion from Alaska, the head football coach at Soldotna High School, Galen Brantley. He has a career record of 116-6, has won 7 state championships in a row, and has a 59-game winning streak. They run the full house tee and the 4-2-5 defense. And Coach, I'm excited to have you here today to talk about some of these things.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Coach, let's start at the beginning for you and talk about the things that really made you want to take on this profession and become a football coach.
I'll share a similar story as a lot of other coaches who got into it for similar reasons. I grew up, some coach grabbed me out of the hallways when I was a kid and wasn't a very good student, convinced me that I could play college ball if I did the right things and got me to the next level. And football's been so good to me. It got me to college. It helped me get an education. I met my wife there. A lot of good things have come to me as a result of my relationship with football, and I've always felt like it was a responsibility of me to pay that forward.
Coach, you're from Alaska. You played your high school ball in Alaska. You played your college ball in North Dakota, and that's where you got your start coaching after college. Tell us a little bit about where you got your start and some of the things you learned there.
Well, right out of college, first teaching job at Bishop Ryan High School in Minot, North Dakota, and they had just come off of winning the state title and really seasoned veteran coaching staff. And one of the things that really stood out to me, thinking back to that experience, is I had a teaching degree. I was teaching in the building, and before they would let me, I was coaching D-line that first year, and before they would let me do a position meeting, I had to present my position meeting to the rest of the staff. I mean, they were very serious about football. A lot of those guys have gone on and become college coaches, and it was really a crash course for me.
Standing up in front of all those guys with that experience, and obviously they're recent state champions, was that a little bit intimidating?
Oh, absolutely. But then again, you don't know what you don't know. We all think we know more coming out of college than we really do. And those guys that have been at the game for 20 and 30 years, they make a living off of those young cats. And so it was important. I think it was an important process in my development personally. And, I think I learned more those first 3 years of just grinding it out than you did probably the next 10.
When you have a young coach join your staff, how do you get them started? What kind of things do you help them focus on as they get into the coaching profession?
Well, I think the first thing, you need to give them some responsibilities. I think of these guys that I know who try and micromanage everything, and there's so many parts and pieces to this, to being a head coach, that you just can't control it all. And I think being willing to let go and oversee them and kind of empower them and give them parts and pieces and make sure it's done right. I think if they can take some ownership, it's no different than our kids. If our kids have ownership in our program, they're going to work their tails off, and it's no different with young coaches.
You're looking back over your career, Coach, and seeing some of the things that helped you develop, what would you point out as maybe some of those key things or points along the way?
I go back to the relationship with my mentor, my high school coach specifically, and the relationship that I had with him. I think that helping mold my character, coming from maybe even a little rougher background, and he kind of set me on the right path. And I think that really was key to my personal development, the same way that there's many coaches out there are with the kids in their own programs. I think that's the first piece. And then I always tell people a lot of times too, with, teaching life lessons and things, I don't think I have to teach a whole bunch of life lessons. I think if I coach football upright and I'm holding kids accountable and doing those kinds of things, football kind of has a way of teaching its own life lessons. And if you've been involved in this game, then you've experienced that at some capacity.
Coach, as you have developed and grown, what are some of the things you've seen change along the way?
I think the biggest change in football from day one when I first started coaching to now is the emphasis on player safety. I think back to the days when we tried to teach toughness to kids through contact, and that's just completely changed. Thing from in Alaska, we've got contact rules. It's 30 minutes twice a week. a lot of states do. We're teaching a rugby style of tackling as well, really emphasizing keeping the head out of contact. The improvements in the equipment that we use. I remember you were either, when you started out, you were a red dot or a green dot, and you were rifling through a box of ear pads to keep it from rattling sideways. And now, quality of helmets and things that we're able to provide for kids is at such a high level. And the amount of supervision and getting kids off to evaluate them if they're in a big collision, just to be safe. That next play is not as important as the player's health. And so I think overall, you know, the game's never been safer. It's never been safer than it is today. And it's taken some time to get there. And maybe some of that negative attention we've gotten from the media has pushed us to that. But regardless of what got us there, my own son plays. You know, I have two boys that are playing the game. And it's a much better experience for them than I think it was 20 or 30 years ago.
And I know when we look at the game, certainly have seen a change. And the people who watch the game, especially on TV on Saturdays, they're going to see guys all over the field, the ball thrown around a little bit more. But in that kind of era, you've focused on what really I think people think as a very physical type of offense and running the full house tee. How does that mesh with, or how do you handle that in terms of being able to, again, be out there, be physical as you can, but at the same time have that player safety in mind as well?
I think it's a misconception that if you run the ball, you're somehow beating kids up or making it more dangerous. The biggest hits I see on TV are a defenseless receiver cutting back against the grain, or some big play that reverses direction, or a special teams play like on a kickoff. I mean, you don't see someone getting absolutely destroyed on a gap power play. It just doesn't happen. That doesn't mean it's not physical, and it takes tough guys to play inside there, but I don't think it makes us or makes our style of ball any less safe. It's just kind of a different way of looking at it. When we have concussions, when we have injuries that occur in our program, it happens a lot in a very similar manner that it does teams that run the spread. It's a contact with the ground, or, you know, those other types of things. But it's just one of those things. It's like, we really, and being a running team, we're really cognizant of, I don't think there's been a week gone by the entire season where we got our 60 minutes of contact during the week. I mean, we always seem to fall short. We just take what we need and what we think we need to get our kids ready for the next week. But it's not like some mad dash to get your 60 minutes worth of contact per week.
Coach, I think you'll agree with this. Whatever kind of offense you run, and I agree with that idea that just because you run the ball doesn't mean that it's more dangerous. I think you would agree. A lot of this comes down to how we teach the game, and especially how we teach the skills of contact. And if we don't spend enough time on that, we certainly do then have that tendency to have bodies just rattling around because they don't know the exact ways to do it. I would think if I went to your practice, I'm going to see a big emphasis on that skill development, on your contact skills, on blocking, defeating blocks, all those types of things.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's very many teams in the country that don't run some kind of tackling circuit that has limited contact. I think USA Football has done a great job with promoting their program, but we don't use the same exact one. I've used it with youth football, and so a lot of the principles carry over, and I think that's been a huge part of it. I think that skill work, again, going back to that whole era of trying to build toughness in kids, I think we've gone, even in a running team, we've gone more to an emphasis of trying to build skill in kids, and the toughness finds a way of coming out in games, and it's not something I really think that we really have to manufacture that. If you've been in the weight room, if you put your time in, those kids aren't going to go into a football game and be soft and play soft. They've already put in, had enough of investment. They're going to go hard.
Well, I know that's part of your culture, that you build this emphasis of being tough, of being physical, certainly of playing the game the right way. But you really believe that the offense you run is part of that and builds into all the things you do. Talk to us a little bit about that.
And when I've talked to you a little bit before we started about it, it's just part of the culture. You know, I think if you have a culture of running the football, I think you have tough kids. I just don't think you build, and this is my own personal philosophy, I don't want to offend any spread guys, but I just don't think you build the same kind of toughness when you're throwing 5 yard outs and smash concepts and things in practice the same way you do if you're doing inside hole and running power, you know, a half line or a power period. I think it's a different, you build a little bit different kind of kid. You think it carries over to every other phase of football. For a really good running team, we're typically really good at defending the run because our kids see it every day in practice, and it carries over to special teams and other phases of the game. So maybe it's my mentality, but I love running the football. It's fun to be on our side when we're moving the ball well and those cats on the other side can't do anything to stop it.
And I know in a spread era, in an RPO era, certainly you don't see many offenses like this. You might see it on Saturdays with the academies a little bit running from the flex bone and being run-oriented offenses. What kind of advantages do you feel you have right now, you know, going up against defenses that most likely are built to stop the spread?
I think that's really it in a nutshell. And we run, along with our misdirection out of the tee, we run midline and veer. And so we really do a lot of things that you would see the academies do. Although we're not in a double split, double wing formation, philosophically it's very similar. You know, I think that it's hard to replicate. When you're playing a spread teams every week, it's easy to, you kind of fall into that mode where you can give yourselves a look. But I think another team that runs the spread trying to line up on our stuff for a week and then give themselves a look is probably pretty tough.
In terms of what people do to stop you, I'm sure you see them line up against spread teams. I guess how much junk defense do you get thrown at you?
We see a lot, to be honest with you. It makes it very difficult for us sometimes to prep from week to week because a team will have a base defense and then they'll scrap it for us. And if we beat it up the year before, it's something completely different. And if we struggle with something, then we'll see it six games in a row, you know. So there's a little bit of that. And so it's a guessing game. And so I've always just had the philosophy that we're going to be able to block anything under the sun. We're a rule-blocking team. We'll usually give them about half of what we think we're going to see. And we're probably right about half the time, you know, so we're wrong a lot. But as far as just giving them the tools to answer, because we have teams that come up and cut us, and so we have drills to work on that we build in, and we have teams that'll just try and blitz us, and so we work on blitz pickup. And the nice thing about being in a balanced formation is you have to put 5.5 guys on each side of that formation, and so it kind of limits some of the crazy stuff we can see. But, yeah, we've seen just about everything under the sun at some point or other.
And I know you guys do pass the ball some. I've seen you run your play action off, and it's really effective. I think, again, going back to the spread mentality, using 53 1/3 yards of the field, that's by formation. I still see you guys getting into all those spaces. It's just coming from the compressed look. What advantages do you see in terms of utilizing the passing game from stuff that's tightened down and now having all kinds of green outside?
Well, it's one of those things, you have to bring DBs in and they have to make tackles to be able to defend us. It's not really an option. If you don't, it's going to be a long day. And so once we get DBs up there and they're being aggressive, we get to take our chances. But it's like anyone else, that in any other offense, if we can run the ball well, play action works really well. And if we don't, it doesn't. And so I think that's very similar to regardless of what offense you run. But we've worked on it a lot. We've stolen ideas from other coaches around the country. Andy Lowry at Columbine High School has helped us quite a bit. We do some very similar things. Coach Griffin at Constantine High School in Michigan. There's a handful of guys that are doing the same thing around the country, and we do share a few things, you know, from time to time.
When you talk to a lot of spread guys, they made that move to the spread essentially to help their numbers and to recruit. And that mentality, I guess, now kids today, you know, everybody wants the ball, so the spread puts it around. I know in your offense, it's a four-back offense, and your ends are getting the ball, so everybody still does that. But probably a difference in how you're selling that to the kids. How did that work for you in, I guess, really getting your guys to buy in and to love running this offense?
Well, they were losing games when we started it, so you can pretty much, I mean, it's a little easier sell. I think if we came into some area that had traditionally ran the spread and said, hey, we're gonna bring everybody in here, they'd probably look at us like we lost our minds. But I think in a program that was struggling or trying to rebuild, controlling the clock, controlling field position, and those other phases that kind of get forgot when you're just trying to score in six plays or less out of the spread, I think it's an easy sell under those circumstances. But it's just over time, it's the identity of our program. Our kids, and don't think we spread the ball around. I mean, we may not be spreading the field out, but he said we're a four-back offense. My quarterback is typically a dual-threat guy who can run and pass, two halfbacks who share carries, and a fullback. And so we're spreading it between four people and then two tight ends that are catching the ball as well. And so the ball is being distributed. The more equally we distribute it, the more effective we are. So that is certainly something that we pay attention to. But no, we break the mold as far as we're not like the things that are that kids see. But when we've, you know, since, I mean, I can't even think of the year, 2006, we've won 11 state titles. Mm-hmm. And we've won the last seven in a row. And so our kids, they've really, I mean, kids don't complain about, oh, we're just going to be in the full house. You know, they like to win games. And so when you win, we don't get criticized very much.
Coach, for you guys, for you, your staff maybe, how enticing is it to see what's happening with the RPO and think about the possibilities with that? Have you guys toyed around with any of that?
RPO for us means run power often. And so we toyed around with it. Other than complaining to officials that there's linemen downfield on pass plays, not a ton, to be honest with you. More of our work has been on the other side, trying to figure out ways to defend it. And it is certainly kind of the next real fad in football. We've managed to survive a lot of fads over the last, you know, 20 years or so. And we just keep sticking to what we're doing. And football changes around us. But I tell you what, I still see teams, even out of the spread, running trap and running power, a very similar thing. So we're just kind of hanging out in our own little world, doing our own thing up in Alaska.
Coach, you mentioned the defensive side of the ball and defending the RPO, and I know everybody on the defensive side is looking for the best answer to do that. What are some ideas you have in defending some of those?
Well, they're tough. It puts your inside linebackers are in a tough spot. They really are, because you have to defend the run. If you don't stop the run, then they're just going to run the ball at you. And so I think that's certainly part of it. I think that I've been to clinics where college coaches have talked about playing, having an RPO side and a run side, and really kind of freezing the backside inside linebacker, kind of like we did when with teams that were running the zone read, where they would read the linebacker. And so I've seen all kinds of things. I think that for us personally, we haven't seen teams that are so absolutely awesome at it that it's really caused us to change a whole lot. But I feel it's kind of coming, and so we've been trying to get better and better at it. I think that those third-level RPOs are fiction. I don't think anybody can do that without having a lineman so far downfield that there's a penalty. But I think the other thing, too, is I think officials really need to be more on top of it, because it's so on the edge of, you know, we see plays all the time that are so on the edge of, man, that kid's a yard and a half down pass where he should be. Why isn't that a flag? You know, and so I think that the better officials get at calling it, too, it'll tame it and it'll bring it a little back, more back into reality.
Going back to your offense and taking a look at things, I know you said if you had one formation, it would be the full house team. And that's pretty easy because it's balanced. It's the same either way. For you, what's the play out of the full house tee that you're going to hang your hat on?
Man, see, that's the tough thing is it's a trick question, because I think any play in our offense can be stopped. Mm-hmm. If you're going to commit enough people to it, you can stop anything. I think for us, we have a reputation of being a very good trap team, but really for us, it's two different traps. And so we run a midline trap like everybody else does, except we coach the living snot out of it, probably with more detail than just about anybody, because we run such a limited number of plays. And then we run a wide trap, and we've kind of paired those together. Quarterback has the flexibility at the line of scrimmage where he'll check it to the widest three tech, or if he doesn't like what he gets, he gets double A or double eagle or something goofy, he'll check it to the wide trap. And so we try and set it up so it's a check with me system, kind of like the option game, so that he always has us in the right play. And so that's kind of how we do it. But really, it's two plays, I guess, rather than one is the short answer.
Yeah, well, that makes sense that you're going to package those together. And obviously, your guard understands he's going to go a little bit farther. That I think everybody understands that. Talk us through a little bit the running back's path and how that's going to vary for him. And I guess some of the dynamics of the play. I was talking with Coach Devon there from Alaska, and he talked about window dressing up his inside, his midline trap was really a key to it, that he's going to get linebackers to flow and then be able to hit a seam. So how does that, especially that long trap, work a little bit differently for you guys?
Well, the difference with the long trap is we get teams that will bend with their three tech or pinch or do kind of, you know, some goofy things to try and be disruptive and squeeze it down and make it difficult for us. And so if we get a three tech, for example, rather than trap him, we'll double him all the way to the backside linebacker, send our tight end to the playside linebacker. And our fullback, instead of hitting up the midline, he'll get the ball in between his first and second steps, keeping his shoulders square, and then basically push, facing everything with one wide kind of giant step, and then back forward. And so it almost looks like the kid makes a really, really good cut on trap. And I've talked to coaches too. It's you know, there's so much congestion in there sometimes. They think that we're running the same play over and over again. And realistically, we're bouncing back and forth between two different plays based on what you're giving us. So they both packaged together have been really great for us. And power's kind of the play for us. We are a power team that keeps the chains moving. That's our 4 or 5 yards a play to keep us on the field. And trap really for us has been more of a home run play. We're as aggressive as we possibly can be into the next level. We have a scheme for it. We're not just running downfield chasing bodies. Tight ends have specific rules. If it's single high safety, we're trying to double team the single high safety. If it's a cover two, each of them have a safety. If it's man coverage, they're blocking the guy that runs with them. And so I think you have to have a plan for how you block the secondary. It's the difference between an 8 or 10 yard run and housing the thing. And for us, it's a successful trap. Once we get our fullback past the linebacker level, if we can get him into the end zone, that's a success. It's a failure if we don't. And so we put a lot of pressure on our kids and try and make that effort downfield really important, because it's an easy one for kids to lose sight of and be kind of lazy and take a play off because he gets tackled behind him 5 times in a row and you don't know which one's going to go. And so we tell them that's the number one sin on trap, is if they have an opportunity to make a play to spring our fullback for a touchdown and you don't make it, that's a sin. So
how do you coach that portion of it up? I know when we go into practice, you know, again, going back to that player safety issue, we're going to go thud, we're going to quick whistle things, that type of stuff. How do you coach up that effort that's going to spring your guy into the end zone? This is actually a recent topic that Andy Ryland and I talked about here on the podcast, that exact thing. You know, I'm interested in how you guys coach that up, especially when we typically do things like that, practice, quick whistle, thud, whatever it might be.
Yeah, I just want to wheel thud just like everybody else, and we're not tackling to the ground and doing those things. But as far as that particular effort into the next level and the faking, we'll put a cone at 20 yards or a coach. We have a turf field, and we'll have a coach that'll be on that, and that'll be his own responsibility. We have a guy that's we want to make sure those fakes go 20 yards downfield every time. And so he's in their ear letting them know about it if it doesn't happen. And it's just one of those things. I think if you make it important and you stop and you're coaching it up, it eventually becomes important. But for us, the proof is in the pudding. I'll show the kid the video of we have a grading scale for our kids for faking. And so they'll go into the game, and if they fake and they don't draw anybody, they get a 0 on that play. Mm-hmm. If they fake and they get a guy to draw on them, they get a 1. If they get a guy to actual or to freeze a guy, it's a 1. If they get a guy to come toward them, it's a 2. If they get a guy to tackle them, it's a 4. And so they're trying to get points. I mean, it's important to them. The deception is huge. And I don't know how you would run what we do if your kids were selfish. I mean, more than anything, you're teaching them to be unselfish. You're not faking for you. Tickets already punch when you have the football. That's easy. Everybody runs hard when they have the football. You got to run hard when you don't have it. And they know. I mean, we're very, very detailed video-wise, you know, film study perspective, and they don't want to be – our kids don't want to be called out in front of the other kids because I took a play off. Maybe that guy would have followed me and it would have been a touchdown. So if you make it important, it'll be important to the kids. I mean, it's not been any fancy recipe for us other than it's an important part of our offense.
Coach, I love that idea for how you grade the fake. I don't think I've had anybody on the podcast talk about that idea. It certainly emphasizes what you guys are trying to get done. And really, again, you're going back to culture, that you're not doing it for you. You're doing it for your teammates. So let's dig in a little bit into how you guys build your culture there. You know, what is it that's really given you the consistency of success?
I think for us, we set high expectations for our kids. All of our kids are in a weight training class with either myself or my defensive coordinator. We set high expectations for how they perform in the classroom. We've won several GPA awards for the state. At one point, we had a 3.33 with 45 kids, you know, as an average. We set high expectations for our kids to do other sports. We don't want them, if they're already lifting in class, I don't want them going home and school's out. I want them going and compete and being coached by somebody else. And so we have a great relationship with the other programs in our building because we're trying to get kids to do their sports. You know, we want them to wrestle. We want them to play basketball, get out for track in the spring. And so, and then in the summertime, that's a little bit of a push for us. You know, we want them in there lifting with us and we go to a couple camps. And so we set pretty high expectations. I wouldn't say anything crazy that other programs aren't doing, but I think we do it at a pretty high level. We get our kids to buy in. And I think once you've done all that, I mean, the season should be fun. The season is the celebration of all the work that you put in from November through August when it starts again. That's the reward for all the hard work that you did.
And I know, Coach, you really pride yourself in having the reputation of getting the most out of what you guys have, even doing more with less. Talk to us about how important that really has become in your program.
Well, we've kind of gotten to a point where the teams, finding non-conference games is kind of hard sometimes. We have a lot of teams at our own level that won't play us anymore. And so we end up having to play, there's three classifications of football in Alaska, and we have to play the non-conference games against teams that are larger. I think it's 5 or 6 years in a row we've started off our season with either the state champion or a runner-up from the large school division, schools of 1,900. And we're sitting down here with about 700 kids. And so, and we've had some success. You know, a couple of years ago, we beat both teams that made the large school state championship game. So we've been pretty fortunate. We've been able to step up, and especially over the last 7 years or so, and we've taken one loss to West Anchorage this last year, who actually was the state runner-up, and we had one of them off games where we had five turnovers, and they were able to score with on a quarterback sneak with 1 second on the clock to beat us. So it wasn't like we gave it away. They still had to earn it. And so, and maybe we don't have the resources that those programs have as far as the size of kids and some of the dynamic athletes and stuff, but we have a great culture here, and our kids play pretty sound football. I have a great coaching staff. I have a lot of guys with college experience. They've been empowered, and they do a great job at what they do. And this run that we've been on the last 7 years or so, or even longer, if I mean, honestly, is really the fruit of their labor as well.
I know what they do is very important to you, whether that's building culture or teaching your systems. For you, what's some of the best things that you and your staff are doing to get that understanding you need on the field so your guys can go out there and perform to their absolute best?
I think we just keep it simple. When you add more water to the Kool-Aid, it gets watered down. And so we stay away from that. We don't want to have so much stuff in that kids are confused. You know, doubt's a very heavy burden to bear. And so we make everything as simple as we possibly can. That, you know, whether it's offense, defensively, doesn't really matter. It's got to be simple. It's got to be stuff they understand. And so for us, I think what we do really well schematically is we take away the complexity. Maybe we look a little vanilla with certain things, but you know, I tell kids too, I want you to be able to come back for your 10-year reunion and run trap power, keep and counter. It seems kind of funny, but I'm telling you, it's things that we've repped things so many times. They've done it thousands of times over and over and over again to the point where it should be ingrained forever.
When you look at our game in general, Coach, what kind of concerns do you have about the future of our game?
I don't like that the numbers are declining in a lot of places. I think we've been under attack by the media for, seems like every time one of these tests comes out that will test a very specific group, brings a lot of negative attention. And then I see really good studies that'll come out and they don't get the same level of attention. Right. And that's frustrating for me because there are some really positive things, even from a scientific standpoint, that come out that more than justify the risks in playing football. And I'm frustrated that they don't get the same level of attention as some of these studies that are really have a specific test group.
And I know that's a tough nut to crack, getting the whole story out there. And I think we'd all agree we want science to continue to advance of this and help our understanding of it. So again, we can work to get better. And you know, you mentioned the beginning is this game is safer than ever, but yet we see the numbers dwindling. What ideas do you have out there to help coaches out there to help grow the game, or at least help these numbers pick up so that this game continues for a long time?
We need to be great advocates for our sport. You know, not only coaches, but our players that are out there. I'm frustrated when I see a guy who is a former, these NFL guys that'll get on there and say, "Oh, I would never let my son play." And that certainly hurts us because they get blown up. They're on every news station, and then you don't seem to see the kind of, I'm going in circles here, but you don't seem to go back to the guys who have benefited greatly from their involvement in the sport. And you see things like Friday night tikes and these things that, and that's not just not realistic. Couldn't be farther from the reality of being involved in football, even at a youth level. And so for some reason we get these things highlighted. I look at this Last Chance U and this coach from Compton screaming and yelling at these kids. And man, if I would have had an experience like that playing football growing up, I wouldn't play. Some of my fondest memories are the men that were examples in my life. And it was nothing like what we're seeing on TV. And I think they highlight some very negative things that I don't think are very realistic across the board.
I know with the way our world works today, we all have some kind of a platform with social media, I guess, to go out and highlight some of those positive things. Do you have any suggestions on things we might be able to do, you know, all of us within our own little space to help make this better?
I absolutely. I think we all do things in our program that go kind of unnoticed. And one of the things I did, and I got the idea from one of my college teammates who actually just resigned and is an administrator now at Ricori High School in Minnesota, was he had his players sign a contract. Basically, the gist of the contract was that they would respect the women that they came in contact in their lives in the future. And there were several questions that we had them answer. And I had my kids do that, and I took them, I sealed them, and I mailed them home to their mothers, and I think I got some of the best responses from parents that I've gotten. And those are the kinds of things that they need to see that are happening within our programs, not the goofy stuff that we see on TV. And we can all promote our program and the positive things that are happening.
Coach, for the young coaches out there, what advice would you offer them to be able to make it in this profession, be able to have long-term success like you've had?
I think the biggest thing, you know, what drives most coaches out of coaching is their family. You end up, the hours are long, it's a lot of commitment. And I think one of the things that's helped me the most is I figured out ways to include my family. My oldest son, who is an All-State tight end for me this year, grew up his whole life, was my ball boy on my sideline. I'd throw him on the bus and he'd get to go to road games, and it was a big deal for him. My wife is my statistician. She's on my sideline taking stats. And so I've tried to figure out ways to include my family as much as I can. The other thing too is, you know, we don't have meetings. I don't have coaching staff meetings after the season starts. You know, we do everything via texting and Google Docs and every other way we can besides meeting. I do a lot of football work at home, so if my wife needs me to do something, I set my stuff aside and that becomes a priority. And so I think that the old days where we would be gone all the time, that was tough, especially with a young family. And as my family got older, it just, you had to put your priorities in order, and family has to be taken care of. And if coaches will learn how to make sure, you know, they have a happy wife at home, they'll let them stay in this profession longer. It's been great. Like I've said at the beginning, a lot of the positive things that happened in my life have been because of my relationship with this sport, and I absolutely love it.
Coach, you're experiencing a ton of success in your program. 116-6. 59 and wins in a row, 7 state championships in a row. Talked about a lot of the great things you're doing in your program here today. But what's one thing you would point to that you really say gives your team that winning edge?
I think empowerment. Our kids really, they have a lot of control over things as far as, you know, we select a leadership council like a lot of teams do, but we really give it teeth. We let them make decisions, and it's really their program. And, you know, we're just along for the ride.
One of the goals of this show is that we allow coaches the chance to reach out to each other and learn from each other. What's the best way for our listeners to connect with you?
Probably email would be the best. G Brantley, Brantley, at kpbsd.k12.ak.us.
And Coach, I know you're also on Twitter, at Coach_Brantley. Another place to Coach out and see what his program's doing. Coach, I really appreciate the time you spent with us here. Congratulations on your state championship, and best of luck to you and your team in 2019.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.